Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Chuck Hammond broadcasting live from the 401k Study Group. Today is May 23rd. The sun is finally out in the mid-Atlantic. I had to call the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Avengers this morning because I thought we were being attacked by some foreign global alien superpower. However, my son informed me that that was not, in fact, the case, that that was just the sun. Today we're doing a 401k case study, increasing your value by improving your service model with Diana Jordan from Unified Trust. Diana, are you there? Diana is not with us yet. She is on the line, but she is not replying. So give me a few seconds to figure this out. Diana, are you with us? Good morning, Diana.
Chuck?
Yes.
Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you now. I haven't been able to hear you, though.
I'm so sorry. I'm not sure what's going on with my phone line, so I'm ready to go. I apologize.
That's okay. Why don't we do this? We're just going to run with it, and I will edit out what I can. So I'm going to restart the show, and then we're going to jump in like it didn't happen, okay?
Okay, that's great.
Great. Well, hold on a second. Give me like 5 seconds, and then we'll restart the show. You don't have to hang up or anything.
Nope, I'll just hang here.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. This is Chuck Hammond broadcasting live from the global headquarters of the 401k Study Group. Today is May 23rd, 2016, and the sun is finally out in the mid-Atlantic. My guest today is Diana Jordan, Director of Client Consulting at Unified Trust. And last week or the week before, she was on talking to us about how a 401k advisor can increase their value by improving their service model. And because Diana is an advisor herself and works with advisors, she knows how important proof is, and she's here to prove it with a case study this morning. So good morning, Diana. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me on. I'm great. We've got the sun here in Illinois, too, so we're pretty excited.
Yeah, I thought we were being invaded by a foreign superpower, so I thought we should call the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or the Avengers and have them help us, but I was informed by my 10-year-old that it was, in fact, the sun, which I did not know that came out around here anymore. So, Diana, so service model, scale, improving how you run your practice is not only important to advisors, but it's also important to the plan sponsors and plan participants that the folks that listen to this show want to know about. So we had you on, and you laid out for us in a very succinct manner a 3-year plan so you don't look like the same Tom, Dick, and Harry, Jane, Jill that come in to talk about funds, fees, and fiduciaries. We're talking about a breath of fresh air, and if you didn't get a chance to listen to that, you should go and listen to it, because today Diana, in the next 25 minutes, is going to cram all of that in with a actual real-life case study. Is that correct, Diana?
That's right. That's right. So I thought it would be helpful to take the topics that we discussed a couple of weeks ago, kind of at a 30,000-foot level, and then distill it down into an actual real-life case study. So I can go ahead and kick us off. Is that all right?
The floor is yours.
All right. Well, I guess first, just as a baseline, I've been doing this for 15 years, and I think when you get the best participant outcomes and driving that success rate for individual participants, it also starts with a plan sponsor that's really engaged. So I'll give you a little analysis of a plan that I've been working with. This is actually year about 2.5 with this particular plan. So I was introduced to this plan sponsor. They attended a seminar that I was doing on driving successful outcomes, and that kind of started the discussion, and that was probably about 3.5 years ago. They had just started looking at their retirement plan, how they might make changes to it, and they were coupling that with a wellness initiative on the healthcare side for their company. So that was my initial introduction to them, attended a seminar. The next thing, you know, as good folks in our industry do, you follow up with those folks that you meet at a seminar. And so in that whole follow-up discussion, I encourage them to do a success analysis with Unified Trust, the company that I work for. So this is where the plan sponsor actually provides us just a few nuggets of information, and we can go into the plan and review it and kind of give it a baseline scale. What's your participation rate? What's your average deferral rate? Most importantly, what is your success rate? Success rate being defined as replacing 70% of your current income in retirement with, of course, Social Security. So we went through that analysis, and I think they were pretty surprised. Their success rate was 29% of current employees. So 29% of employees were on track to retire, essentially. And I think that was a pretty shocking number. And also, it's never, they really, you know, other vendors really don't apply that number. They don't show that number. A lot of folks talk about participation rate and average deferral rates, but as you know, Chuck, you could have a 95% participation rate, but if everyone's just deferring 3%, odds are they're not, you know, you're not going to have a great success rate for that particular plan, you know, being able to replace that 70% in retirement. So I'll give you some other baseline numbers for this particular plan. Had a national provider. The fund menu was actually really good. They had low-cost index funds. They had an ERISA 321 fiduciary that was working with their plan, helping them select those investment options, and they would do an annual investment review. They also had quarterly education meetings, and their education meetings were basically the educator would come and sit in the break room and bring donuts, and, you know, people would just kind of filter in throughout the day. There wasn't a sign-up process to meet with them. And they would review, you know, your current balance, what you're putting in the plan. And they also had a tool online where you could enter a bunch of information about each participant, hit a couple of buttons, and it would actually produce a retirement projection for that employee. And then they could print it off, give it to the employee. So that was kind of the framework of what they were doing in this plan. And they actually really liked the platform, and they really liked the advisor that was working with them from an education perspective. So, but I think the bottom line was they started looking at how are we going to drive these outcomes, particularly now that we know we've only got 29% of employees on track. So when one of the things I talked about at the seminar that they attended a few months prior was using those intelligent defaults. And as you know, Chuck, I'm a huge advocate of automatic enrollment and progressive savings. So this particular plan sponsor had thought about it in the past, but I think we were successful in explaining how we can drive outcomes using those tools and showing them some data on other plans that we had done this for. So also, just number of participants, had about 225 employees, and the assets were about $5 million. So we went through an RFP process, and they included their current platform and advisor in that process. And then we also came in, obviously, with the Unified Trust platform. And just as a reminder, I think one of the differences in using those intelligent defaults, obviously, but it's also our statements are such at conversion that we give you all the answers. So we're going to hand out a personalized retirement plan for each employee using those intelligent defaults, and I'll touch on that in a second. So long story short, we were selected as the platform provider. So one of the first things that we did with the plan, we had a retirement plan committee that was comprised of the CEO and a couple of key managers and the controller of the company. So we came in and we thought it would be important to do fiduciary training just to also kind of set a baseline for responsibilities. So that was one of our first steps. Providing fiduciary training. Now that we were selected, we wanted to make sure everybody was on the same page so that they understood exactly what their responsibilities were as the plan sponsor. The next thing we did was to look at the plan document. All right, so we wanted to take a look at, again, using intelligent defaults. That's something everyone is doing these days. Automatic enrollment and progressive savings. So they were all on board with implementing automatic enrollment at 4% at conversion, and then progressive savings at 2%, and their annual date would be the next May 1st. That was when it kind of coincided with increases across the board, cost of living increases to employee, and then merit increases. So we selected May 1st. The other thing we looked at was the employer match. Now, we kept the same match formula, which is 50% up to 6%, but before conversion, they had actually a 2-year wait in order to be eligible for the employer match, and we reduced that to 2 months. Again, this is the market that they are in recruiting and retaining employees is really competitive, and we suggested to them that this would be an excellent tool if you decrease that waiting period for that employer match. So we were successful in discussing that with them. The entry dates were also just twice a year. So once you met eligibility, you would really only be able to come into the plan for the employer match January 1 and July 1. So we decreased that to go right in line with that 2 months of service. And then the vesting schedule. This was something much different because if you have a 2-year wait, you would, for the profit sharing or for the employer match, employees would be then 100% vested in that contribution. And we changed that. We basically grandfathered everyone in who were hired on a specific date before, during conversion, that they were going to be 100% vested in the employer match. And then going forward, we implemented a 6-year graded vesting schedule for all new hires. So everybody that was there at the company were all 100% vested in that employer match, and then all new hires would go with that 6-year graded schedule. Now, so we did all this plan design, we did fiduciary training, all those things were new to them. They hadn't had a lot of discussion about plan design and how that could dovetail into creating success and driving those outcomes for participants. So then we embarked on the actual conversion for the plan. And as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago in our last podcast, we prepared customized memos for two different employee groups in the plan. And so since we were implementing automatic enrollment at 4%, and then progressive savings at 2%, this is how we defined those two groups. All right, so everyone who was deferring less than 4% was one group, and everyone who was deferring 4% or more was in another group. Each of those groups received a very customized cover letter on top of their specific retirement plan projection, individualized retirement plan projection. And within that memo, what we discussed, so let's take the first group. If you're deferring 4% or more, well, first of all, congratulations. That's fantastic. We also talked with them about that extra 2% to get to the maximum employer contribution of 6%. And we distilled that down to what it was going to cost them per paycheck. So if you defer just 2% more, it was going to cost you X dollars out of your paycheck on a biweekly basis. And then we also took that group and we defaulted them into progressive savings just at conversion. And so we also told them what that extra 2% would cost next May. So we did this conversion the summer before, next May 1st being their first progressive savings or auto escalation increase. All right, so that was the group number one, those deferring 4% or more. For folks that were deferring 0 to 4, we were going to we defaulted all of those folks in at 4%. So we wanted to show them what that 4% was going to cost per paycheck to them, plus the extra 2% that was going to happen with the progressive savings increase next May. And then we also, in both of those groups, showed them that employer match that they were missing out on before. So made a big difference, very, very simple summarized cover sheet to that specific retirement plan projection. And the projection that we used also covered both of those groups. So we're going to show them if they're on track, and about 95% of employees would be on track if they just followed those defaults at conversion.
Diana.
All right. So yes, go ahead.
I'm going to jump in real quick. And I don't want to get you off rhythm, but here's a couple of things that I think that we see. We were literally just talking to an advisor this morning, and you know, we made the point that, you know, when you ask the folks at the sponsoring company what's important about the retirement plan, we hear things like expenses, good funds, fiduciary, ease of use, good tools. When you ask the participants, the only thing they care about is, when can I retire?
Exactly.
So
yes.
When advisors go out to do this kind of thing, have you found in your experience, more so when you were an advisor, that there's a disconnect between the plan, the people that run the plan, who are responsible for the plan, and for the participants in it?
I would say initially, maybe at the first meeting when you're starting to talk about, the funds, fiduciary, and fees, I also think with this wellness initiative, I see this across all the plans that I work with, as well as all the advisors I work with. Actually, we were doing a seminar or a conference last week, and I just asked a group of advisors, how many of your plans are talking about wellness initiatives? And probably more than half of the crowd raised their hand. So I think as plan sponsors start seeing the benefits of having a wellness program, I think that you're going to get more employers that are paternalistic, that want to drive those outcomes. You know, also, too, we've been talking about funds, fees, and fiduciaries for 10 years. You know, so what is the next big thing? To me, it's driving these outcomes. It's actually having a plan that does what it's supposed to do, which is help people retire. You know, again, you can have a great participation rate, but no one's on track. And so if you're not measuring that, how are you making a difference in the plan?
Well, I think much like with anything, you have to ask the 3 follow-up questions. So if you've got a 97% participation rate and you go, great, that's awesome, what's the percentage rate? So it's asking those, we always call them the 3 additional questions. So, you know, back in your days, you know, you'd say, hey, do you want to go to the movies? And the person would say, yeah. And then you'd say, how about Friday? How about Friday at 8? How about Friday at 8 and we'll go see X? It's the 3 additional questions that really add clarity. And the other thing that I want to bring up, and I know we're here talking about, you know, increasing your value by improving your service model, but you blew through fiduciary training. And when you were actively engaged with the plan sponsors in your previous incarnation, how many times did you go into a plan where you were not the incumbent and ask if they'd had any fiduciary training, and of those times, how many times was the answer yes?
I have never prospected or worked with a plan that prior to had fiduciary training, ever, in my 15 years.
My job is to uncover hidden gems inside of the podcast. So here are the two hidden gems that we that are not part of your formal improving your service model. Fiduciary training, absolutely needed. Plan sponsors don't know where to go to get it. And if you have an advisor or a relationship with a provider that can give that, that's a hidden gem. Secondly, disconnect with a lot of plan sponsors and the participants about what the reason for having the plan is. The participants just want to know how much they need to retire, and the plan sponsors, in some cases, have a totally separate agenda. Not that those agendas are bad, but what you're talking about is as we're starting to see wellness come downstream from the big 3,000-person corporation to the 300-person corporation, I think what we're going to see is a much better alignment of that. So I just wanted to point those two things out because they're critically important, and I know we're trying to get the case study in, so I'll be quiet now, but I did not want those being overlooked. So go ahead and finish.
Sure. Let me, I will just share some numbers with you based on this conversion that we did. Again, we utilized all those defaults. And at the end of the conversion meeting, at the end of the employee education meeting, I just said, you know, if you're okay with all of these defaults, meaning if you're not in the plan and you're not doing at least 4% today, we're going to put you in at 4 plus another 2 next May. And then for everybody doing more than 4%, we're going to leave you at your current deferral, but then we're going to default you into progressive savings next May. If you're good with that and we'll default you into a managed account solution, we'll do all the hard work for you if you'd like us to. We can do that as the discretionary trustee and with our relationship as the advisor. Then we don't need a form from you, all right? We don't need an enrollment form. You don't need to do anything. I think I was asked that question maybe 100 times during the meeting. We really don't need anything from you. We already have beneficiary forms on file. That's a common question I get whenever we talk about this no enrollment form meeting. But then we also, 6 months later, we do kind of a beneficiary form drive where we send beneficiary forms out to everybody just to have them check and then to send them back in. That's how we make sure that we've got that box checked. So here's the number. So a little drum roll. So before, we had an average deferral rate of 3.76%. All right. We had a participation rate of 62%. And we had only 29% of employees on track for a successful retirement. All right. We received total 50 enrollment forms out of 225 employees. 25 employees opted out. Okay. They said, we don't want to participate, which is, you know, we'd like to see 100% participation, but I know that's difficult to achieve. And then the other 25 actually increased their deferral above the numbers that we put in the retirement projection. They were so excited just to see all the numbers together for the first time that 25 increased their deferral. So here's the after numbers. Our average deferral rate went up to 4.90%. Remember, we're max, the employer is going to match up to 6%. So we made a really good first stab at that. That's a 30% increase in the average deferral rate. Our participation rate went from 62% to 82%. That's another 32% increase in the after rate. Progressive savings, our default rate into progressive savings, either you chose it or you were defaulted into it, was at 76%. All right, again, 2% next May 1st. The default rate for the managed account solution, the QDIA in the plan, was 96%. All right, the other 4% chose a risk-based model. We did not have one employee, all right, out of 184 employees that built their own asset allocation. Not that that doesn't happen from time to time, but what I see in the plans is when I ask employees who wants to do their own thing, manage their own portfolio, we have maybe one or two in an audience of 20, okay? So in this plan, 96% in the QDIA. Here's the biggest number, and this just – I was just amazed at this. So we had 29% of employees on track before. Now we have 87% on track to replace at least 70% of their income in retirement. That's a 200%
increase. Before you go past that, you went from 24 to what?
29% success rate to 87% success rate.
So 29. So was the employer, the plan sponsor, were they shocked by the 29%?
Totally shocked initially by the 29%. And then the 87%, I think we were maybe shooting for a 60% range as far as that success rate. But we were totally blown away by the progressive savings, the number of folks that will automatically increase their deferral next May. So totally blown away, because I had never even had a success rate for progressive savings that high. Usually it was in, you know, maybe high 60s range, but to have 76%. And we also assumed that we would have some people drop off, okay? So this was the summer of 2015 is when we did the conversion. And so May 1st, 2016, we just hit their progressive savings date, May 1st. So let me tell you those numbers, because this was pretty shocking too. And we've been monitoring it all along. And I thought it would pretty well, you know, stay up there in the 70% range. And it has. It's at 74% today. So their deferral rate increase this go around with progressive savings was a 20% increase across the board as far as what they're actually putting in the plan. So, and that 20% change, so we did 30% at conversion. Now we're up another 20% as far as their just real dollars going into the plan. So that's another $120,000 on an annual basis that employees at this company are putting in the plan out of their own paycheck. That's not the employer match, and that's just year two. So, didn't change the match, just changed, you know, the ability to get in. So pretty dramatic numbers.
So we've got about 3 minutes left, and I don't want to cut you off, but I do want to make a couple of things very evident. You know, when we talk about changing the way an advisor does business, we usually get a lot of roadblocks. People don't like change. I don't like change. You don't like change. So we try to portray it as doing something different, being a breath of fresh air. So we've uncovered some things that are important. Wellness is moving downstream, and there sometimes can be a disconnect between plan sponsors and the people that run the plan. The thing that we uncovered was the need for predictable, factual, practical fiduciary training. And here's the last thing we uncovered. Plan sponsors don't necessarily know if their people are on track to retire. So as far as a case study goes, I couldn't have asked for better numbers. However, the ancillary benefit to this is uncovering other things that advisors can focus on if they spend less than 30 minutes to listen to this podcast, regardless of whether they listen to the one before it. So before I let you go, we've got about a minute and a half. Sum it up and then let people know how they can get a hold of you to get in the weeds or figure out how they can do this themselves.
Sure thing. So I would just say in this market, I think you have to be different. And the way to be different is everyone has adopted intelligent defaults. I shouldn't say everyone. About 50% have adopted these intelligent defaults. But you've got to go that next mile. What do you do? Because it isn't just by adopting the defaults, you have to take it to that next step. Like you said, you know, that extra three questions, what can we do now? That's how you're going to get more business. That's how you're going to have really good relationships with your current clients driving these outcomes. And two, you get through conversion and you have a great success like this and you get through the first year. What do you do next? So you need to then go back to those 25 folks that opted out. Do something different with them. Show them the path again, how to re-engage and get in the plan. So that's how you can make your practice different. So you can call me. I'd love to get in the weeds. This is something I'm really very passionate about. So my name is Anna Jordan. I'm the Director of Client Consulting with Unified Trust, and my direct number is 217-820-1699.